On this Friday, it is St. Pete Conversation from the St. Petersburg Downtown Neighborhood Association meeting on Wednesday evening that took place at St. Peter's Cathedral on Williams Park downtown. Representatives from the Waterfront Parks Foundation, Phil Graham Jr. and Bill Dahl, and in the second half of the program, Manny Leto from Preserve the Berg. This is the St. Pete Downtown Neighborhood Association meeting, recorded Wednesday evening, beginning with Phil Graham.
I spoke a couple of years ago, I think. I don't know if I see some familiar faces, but there's a lot of new things happening, and we wanted to kind of share that with you. Bill, it's going to take up some of the slides with you, and we'll be quick. But I did want to say that in 2012, just give you a little background, the parks were coming out of the 2008 recession with very little money. And as a result, they were in horrible shape. They were in the 80s, we had some wonderful plants going on and things. Well, the maintenance was deferred maintenance did not even exist. So it was they just didn't have any money. So I thought it would be a good idea to have a foundation formed, which I did, to preserve, protect, and promote that valuable piece of real estate. I mean, it is, in my mind, the most valuable asset St. Petersburg has. And we need to keep it, and we need to enhance it in the right way and make sure that it's preserved in a wonderful state. So there were a number of things that were going wrong then, and we've tried to correct a number of them. There's a lot of utility blight, you know, all kinds of transformers and things in the park. We've cleaned up a lot of that. There was the maintenance now has been through our advocacy for the parks. The city has dumped a lot of money. They had a budget that was like a line item, and it went for all the parks in St. Petersburg. So they just divvied it up. And they never had a hierarchy for our downtown parks, which is such an important feature. So we got that changed. Now there's a lot more money going to the downtown park system, which is allowing us to make some enhancements that will really maintain it better. The parks were getting run down. We're also looking at, there was the zoning, some problems years ago. They just let housing zoning go into the park. So we took it upon ourselves to get attorney, and we've changed the zoning, put it together in a nice package, given it to the city. They promised that they would act on it at some point. So what it does is it sets the waterfront parks, which, by the way, go from 30th Avenue North to 22nd Avenue South. So it's 7 miles of park, and it's a big deal. And I think it's so important to us. There's so many people, and the impact of that waterfront on the economy of our city is just, you can't put a dollar value on it. So Bill's running through a few of these things, but we did change the zoning. We're looking at cleanup and enhancement. I designed a swing, which we put in a couple of years ago. It's been, we actually have a little QR code there, and people have been able to survey it, you know, and tell us what they think. Overwhelmingly, it's just people love it. So we've got five more coming. And they're not cheap, but we have a donor who's given us the money for all five. And those will be started, and probably be about 6 months, and they'll all be in. They're in strategic places along the waterfront park, and we don't want to add clutter to the park, so we're trying to place those where there already is a tree clump or something that would not add any more verticality that would block the water views. And where we put it next to a bench or near a bench, we're going to remove the bench and have the swing instead. So we're trying to remove and replace with more appropriate appurtenances. So the flowers that you see down there are all on us. I had a donor that's been funding that. It's about $50,000 a year for those. It doesn't cost the city. They just didn't have the money for it. And now we're working now to change some of that. So And there's a lot of pressure to develop areas right adjacent to the park or even move into the park system. So when I found the foundation, we had all people wanted to build facilities into the park. And so we put a stop to that. We've been involved in the marina question over there. The original concept would have been a major problem for Demon's Landing. So there are things that we're doing along that way. I don't want to take a lot of time, but anyway, we appreciate you, and we have a very exciting event coming up that I want Bill to speak to. He's on our marketing committee and just brilliant at that, and go for it.
All right,
thank you very much.
Thank you, Phil. Phil has been the visionary behind Waterfront Parks, and they work so closely with the city. It's really wonderful to see. We're looking at kicking off some fundraising events, initiatives, and one of them is coming up in November. So I know we're tight on time. You'll see Manny is here tonight. He's presenting. You'll see that we partner with any number of civic organizations, including Preserve the Burg. We're all working together to keep St. Pete special. The park fundraising events, we have a capital campaign that'll be kicked off in the not-too-distant future. But the first up that's teed up is really for November 18th. It's called Picnic Land. And really what we're doing is we're inviting all of you to join us in the quest to create the world's longest picnic blanket record. So we have already purchased enough picnic blankets to cover that, which is over a mile. And we are going to wind them around. It'll look a lot like, it'll feel kind of like a life-size Candyland. And what we're doing is where you can actually see these are blankets, actual blankets there. They're actually very spacious. They're 9 by 10, and they can easily seat 4 to 6 people. We invite people to come in and register. When you register and you do the $40 registration, that's not just good for one person. That's for your entire family or collection of friends and family. So it can seat 4 to 6 people, and you walk away with a blanket. So there's going to be a number of things going on. We're going to have everything from musicians there, including some fixed and some that will be wandering from various groups. We are going to have Tampa Bay Watch will be there. The Great Expectations.
Exploration,
yeah. Sorry, will be there. We're hoping Manny will be there in some capacity. Well, speaking of which, we have a magician that will be wandering and doing roaming performances. Tons of kids' activities. So bring the kids, bring the grandkids, bring, neighbors, everybody, and make yourself at home. It'll be a fun time. There's going to be food there and lots of entertainment. With that, we'll wrap it up.
Can you say the date?
Yes, it's November 18th.
Thank you.
And I do have some flyers. I'll put some flyers on the table. Feel free to pick one of those up. And if you're kind enough, when you go back to your abodes, if you live in a building, please consider placing these at the front desk. That'd be wonderful. We hope to see all of you out there. It's going to be a great time. Lots of entertainment, lots of food, fun, and plenty for the kids to do.
And
thank you.
Reach it on the website.
Yes, you can reach us at www.picnicland.org. It is not. I would not encourage dogs simply because we're going to have a lot of blankets there. There's not going to be that much grass in between. It could be a real mess if the dogs are active, shall we say. Unfortunately, it's just too tight to really have pets running around. But it's a great question.
So you had a question?
I have one quick question.
Yes.
Thank you so much for all the work you've been doing with the foundation. The first bullet on the challenges, can you explain further? I think it mentioned something about limiting the use of the waterfront park.
Yeah. I don't know if this works. Yes, the use of the waterfront parks, right now we have some super big events that go on. And if you are down there after one of these events, it takes months for the grass to get back in. I mean, it's dirt. We have images, aerial images of just absolute no sod left. So we're trying to, we're working with the city right now. They're going to stabilize Vannoy Park, for example. And there's, right now, trucks can go all over the place. They're going to have a place for trucks and with a subsurface reinforcement and the grass. And the type of events is going to be hopefully much less of traffic on there that would be detrimental to the area. That's what that's all about. And we're looking at other sites for things to happen. We've got a lot of good parks around. There's no reason. There's a lot of venues. So,
Phil Graham Jr. and Bill Dahl representing the Waterfront Parks Foundation speaking on Wednesday night at the St. Petersburg Downtown Neighborhood Association meeting. The other presentation was from Manny Leto representing Preserve the Berg.
I want to thank the Downtown Neighborhood Association for inviting me here and giving me the platform to talk to you a little bit. Again, my name is Manny Leto. I'm the executive director of Preserve the Berg. Tonight, I'm going to kind of go into an initiative that we have taken on and worked pretty diligently on over the course of the last year. But it sort of occurs to me that I've never really come down here to just introduce myself and talk to you. So I would rather do some of that first, and then we can kind of dive into some of the details of something that we're working on. So I know that many of you are familiar with Preserve the Berg. I see a Preserve the Berg t-shirt here, so good, thanks for representing. It's like going to the concert and wearing the band shirt, you know? Okay, so just as an overview, Preserve the Berg, you know, our basic mission is to educate, celebrate, and advocate for St. Petersburg's historic resources. Now, historic resources is a very fancy way of saying old buildings, old stuff. We are focused on preserving, enhancing, celebrating those the historic character of the city. And we do that in a few different ways. That just did that on its own. All right, magic. I thought it was Halloween. So, of course, what we, you know, you may be most familiar with Preserve the Berg through our public programs. We host a regular schedule of walking tours. Of course, you guys are out and about walking around downtown every day, but a lot of folks aren't. And so we are bringing people into the downtown, and we get a good mix of both visitors and residents, people who have people in town visiting, to walk around and learn about the history of St. Petersburg and downtown in specific. We've just partnered with USF Libraries to launch a new lecture series called Place Matters, focusing on, you know, the places and people that really define St. Pete and kind of expanding the definition of historic preservation. So talking about archaeology and other things. And then 2 years ago, we launched a program called the Preservation Expo. And this is a way to kind of bring people together, both vendors and people who work in the trades, but also speakers and presenters to talk about historic preservation and topics related to it. And we've really grown that program. It was at the History Museum this past year. So lots of public programs. These are two that we've got coming up. Movies in the Park, of course. And then our Next Place Matters talk, and both of those are 100% free. So come on out and watch E.T. or the Addams Family, or, you know, hear about 500-year-old Florida maps. You can go to the next one. So the other part of what Preserve the Berg does is the advocacy piece. And, you know, I'm relatively new to the organization. I've been with Preserve the Berg for about 2.5 years. But the cumulative effect of Preserve the Berg over decades is tremendous. Now, we're not always the most popular group in the room, and I get that. But if you look at the track record of what Preserve the Berg has been able to accomplish and advocate, I think that it would be hard to argue that we should not have fought for these things. Let's put it that way. The Vannoy Hotel is a great example. Tear it down. Let's tear it down. That was the St. Pete Times editorial board in the 1980s and the 1990s. But who would say that we'd be a better city without it? So we kind of operate in hindsight, I guess. The things that we advocate for are sometimes very contentious, but then we look back and we say, you know, that was probably the right call. Preserve the Berg helped write the ordinance to save the hex block pavers. We helped with the preservation of the Chrislip Arcade, which had been vacated and was slated for demolition, but instead sparked a renaissance on the 600 block. I'll tell you a very quick story. I was living in Tampa, and I was working at the Tampa Bay History Center at the time, and I kept hearing all this stuff about St. Pete and the 600 block and about how all this cool stuff was happening on the 600 block, and it was filtering over to Tampa. And I wrote on my Facebook page at the time, and this was 12 years ago, I said, would somebody please find out who is working to save the 600 block and get them over to Tampa to help us out? And I'm working for that organization now. So life is weird. Life is weird. And a couple of other things. Let's just say most recently, we partnered with the Jack Kerouac House Foundation to help preserve and name the Kerouac House in Diston Heights a local landmark. So you can see, again, quite a track record over many years with Preserve the Berg. Oh, I keep forgetting that you've got this for me. So, all right, so now we're going to get a little nerdy. What I've been trying to talk about with the wider community is if Preserve the Berg, we're a historic preservation organization, so we care about old stuff. Granted, if you place historic preservation at the center, which is our mission, which is what we want to do, what we also want to do is talk about all of the things that touch historic preservation and historic resources. Things like heritage tourism. As an example, heritage tourists usually spend more money and they spend more time in the cities in which they visit. We can talk about sustainability. One of the mantras of historic preservation, the greenest building is a building that already exists. I'll give you a weird stat. 30% of Pinellas County's landfill landfill is what? Construction debris. So all that stuff's got to go somewhere. So if we're saving straws and we're going to save our plastic, and we're going to save whatever we're going to save, we should probably think about reusing our buildings as well. So again, trying to widen that conversation. Affordable housing. Most lower income folks, young families starting out, younger people starting out, live in older homes. Pre-1970s homes are often more affordable for people on the lower income spectrum, and also, again, first-time home buyers and things like that. The more of that pre-1970s housing stock that we get rid of, the less affordable the city becomes. You're probably not going to build your way out of a housing crisis. It's too expensive. But what you can do is try to preserve and put some money into housing that already exists. And in St. Pete, in downtown in specific, I would say you're net gaining for sure. But a lot of these buildings that are coming down are housing, you know, dozens of folks. Or they have, you know, in Mirror Lake, when you look at what's the collection of buildings that are coming down in Mirror Lake, you know, it's like 100 units. So if you're going to knock down 100 units, how many of your units, you know, so, you know, how much are you really netting out? So anyway, so looking at kind of all of these different aspects of historic preservation. You can go to the next one. Again, just kind of some recent headlines here, all from Florida. So trying to look a little bit more, I guess, quantitatively at historic preservation. In the past, historic preservation was really based on aesthetics or a particular historical something. So we like that old house. We like the way it looks. Let's save that house. Somebody famous stayed here. Let's save that. But as I alluded to in the previous slide, and these headlines suggest, maybe it's more dynamic than that. Those things are absolutely important. We want to see the layers of our history reflected in our city. You want to be in a city that's different and is unique, that doesn't look like everywhere else, right? So those things are important. Aesthetics are important. But maybe all of these other economic factors are of equal importance. So as Karen mentioned, one of the things that we're really proud of is that we, the beginning of this year, we started fundraising for a place to bring place economics to St. Petersburg. Place economics is a firm that does a quantitative and qualitative analysis of cities. And so we have brought them to St. Petersburg to do the first economic analysis of historic resources in St. Petersburg. You can go to the next one. And you can see some of the results of their work. They have done studies like this across the country, both, you know, in Florida and Palm Beach, in Miami, Nashville, Los Angeles, Phoenix, New York City, and now St. Petersburg. And again, you can kind of see some of the numbers that they're putting behind this. I won't go through all of these, and I don't know if you can see them in the back, but you know, this one on the right is the one that has stuck with me, that over 200,000 units of pre-1970s housing has been lost, but only about 100,000 units of housing has been built using the low-income housing tax credit. So you're not going to build your way out of into affordability. You can go to the next one. Again, just kind of tying stats. I know that this is probably a little too wonky, but just tying stats to, this is about property values in historic districts in St. Augustine. You can go to the next one. Again, just hammering this affordability issue. This is from the San Antonio study that they conducted. In Nashville, again, a lot of wonky numbers here. Works better in a smaller group, but from far away. Basically, what this is showing you is that millennials only make up 30% of the housing home buyers in Nashville, but they disproportionately live in older housing. So what are we going to do? And again, this is super deep dive stuff. So I'm just going to be very brief here. But we're going to look at density. We're going to look at, again, what I mentioned earlier. You know, a lot of times we're replacing density with density. Sometimes your historic neighborhoods and your historic districts are already dense neighborhoods, and so maybe we can look at some other places for that level of density. And again, I've gone on about affordable housing, so we'll just go to the next one. We'll look at property values within the flood zone. And again, why would we do that? Well, what gets studied gets funded, and we want to take an assessment of the value of properties within a flood zone because we can possibly direct funding to resiliency efforts to save and preserve those places. For instance, FEMA has money available for restoring and putting money into historic resources that are located within flood zones. So let's map that. And that data is there and available. I'll get to the social value. And I meant to update this, and I thought that I did, so I guess I sent you an older version. But the other thing that we're going to look at is on the to be determined, we're going to look at Central Avenue. And one of the things of note there, and again, a lot of this stuff, you know, let me stress too, we don't know what the answers for St. Pete are going to be. These are things that are tend to be true in other places. We want to see if they're true in St. Pete. So we don't really know. One of the things we can say anecdotally or just visually about Central Avenue is that a whole lot of Central Avenue is pre-1970s build. You know, it's not historically designated. It's not a landmark, but it's older. And we want to look at local businesses that might be housed in those older buildings and why that is. Is it more affordable for them? Is there something about those spaces that make it easier for local businesses to thrive? The last thing on our little scope of service here is a survey. So we're going to be sending out a quality of life survey, and I hope that the Neighborhood Association would send that out. We want to make sure that, of course, we can't send that out just to our folks because, you know, our list is going to say, you know, preserve everything. But we want to get a broad consensus or a broad understanding of how people think and feel about these issues, how they're using their city. So we've asked the Downtown Partnership to send it out. We've asked the city to send it out, and we have asked various neighborhood associations to send it out. So we want to get a cross-section, and you know, we want to try to hear from as many folks as possible. We'll go to the next one. And then just, we said we've been fundraising all year long, and so these are just some of our partners. Very happy to have the city buy into this effort, as well as the Downtown Partnership come on board as a sponsor. So that's really the our board president, Robin Reed, has been talking about this effort for several years. We are finally able to move it over the finish line this year. And then I think there's one more slide just to give them credit. We were hoping to get it completed by the end of this year, and I think it will be, but we will probably roll it out in January. Because I think I'm gonna end up with a finished report in December, and when everybody leaves for the holidays, so we might just wait until January to kind of put it out to the public. But that is my story on place economics, and I'm gonna hang out. I've got time. Any questions about what I do, what Preserve the Burg does, this study? If you want to talk about old buildings, we can do that too. I'm here for your questions. Yes, sir.
First of all, thank you for everything that you've done with preserving a lot of the historic structures in the city. And as you were talking, I was reminded of an incident. Actually, it was more of an experience when I was stationed in Kosovo in 2000. I was the only U.S. officer. Everyone else happened to be Europeans in my office. And one of the questions the Brits and the French asked, what is the culture of the United States? What is the culture of America? So my response to them was this: I'll never see a gravestone that says 1101 to 1124. Nor will I see the beautiful architecture that I see here in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So that there lends to me a lot of credence on what you're doing.
in this city, trying to preserve that history so that whenever we have visitors here, we can show them something about the past. And one of my favorite places to take my visitors to happens to be Rosa Park.
Hmm.
It totally freaks them out.
Yes,
see this.
Me too.
Cobblestone area that is also elevated with all of these beautiful structures.
Yeah.
Just continue doing that. And one question, what is going on with Janice? At one time, I know that Preserve the Bird was in a fight with the developer.
On which? I'm sorry?
Janice Land and that entire block between 4th mm-hmm. and 3rd.
Yeah. So he asked about Janice Land. So thank you, by the way. And I love Rosa Park. I'm a Florida native and Tampa native. The first time that I went into Rosa Park, I mean, it just blew my mind. It feels like you're in Atlanta or somewhere. I don't know. It's a very odd thing. And I will also mention, I don't know if that was on the slide, but so Preserve the Berg in the late 1980s and early 1990s worked with the Rosa Park Neighborhood Association to designate Rosa Park as the city's first local historic district. Rosa Park is the first local historic district, and I think that was kind of a proto or very early Preserve the Berg. You mentioned Janice Landing. So there was an effort a few years ago to designate what we were calling first block, because that is really the first historic commercial block of downtown St. Petersburg with the Detroit Hotel, the Benny Bishop Hotel, those blocks. And so I think that we filed a designation report. I don't think it went anywhere. It's there. That's all I can say about it. So that you are aware, and I don't. I should have showed a map. I should have thought a little more closely about my audience. Downtown St. Petersburg, part of it is a National Register Historic District. So many of you are already living in a historic district. It's called an NR district. An NR district is more of a, it's an honorary sort of title. It just sort of elevates and calls attention to a place and says, hey, this is something that's worth taking note of. But importantly, and you can maybe speak to this a little bit, it also allows you to take advantage of tax credits and tax incentives. So being in if you have a historic building in a NR district, you can get an ad valorem tax break. You can apply for grants and other funding. And I know that Flory has applied for some of this funding or gotten some breaks, I believe. Yeah. Right. So, Central Avenue, Central Avenue is part of Central Avenue. The north side of it is part of the NR district, but is not locally protected. So when you're in an NR district, you can still tear down the building and kind of do what you want there. When it's locally protected, then you get into restrictions on if you can demolish the building or not. Yes.
My friends and I call it the magic block. Honestly, you walk around that block and it is wonderful. There's live music coming
every
time you turn the corner. There's really no protection.
No, so anyone who owns any property really along Central Avenue, we just lost there was the Woolworth building around 7th Street, I think, somewhere around there. You could tear it down if you wanted to. Instead of getting into that exercise, one thing that I want you to do is you walk around your downtown neighborhood. Think about how and why First Block works the way that it does. It's many different small storefronts, many different shapes, sizes, spaces. It's different. When you're going out and you want to bring your visitors, you want to bring them somewhere that they've never been or never seen. It's unique, and it's difficult to quantify that. And that's why we're working on this study. But, and I think that's been a challenge for historic preservation, because the economic argument has not been made. And so I'll give you, you know, one example of that, or just to kind of continue on this first block thing. A lot of times your small businesses relocate into these storefronts. Why? Because they're adaptable, because they can be changed over and over and over again. So if you look at sort of the layers of a history, you know, a particular building has been a bakery, it's been a bank, it's been a this, it's been a residence, it's been many, many different things over its life. And there's a certain adaptability to these historic buildings that doesn't really exist as readily in newer construction. The other thing is, when you have a smaller storefront, I mean, stand in front of those storefronts and you'll find that most of them are about as wide as your arms. And that means that if you have a small business that you want to try out, you want to, you know, it's a lot easier to rent an 800 square foot storefront and pay that rent and start your cupcake business than it is going to be to rent a quarter of a bottom floor high rise building. And I'm not saying we don't want those structures. I mean, many of you are residents in those buildings, but it's important to have a mix of building types and construction within a downtown. That's what makes the city walkable. That's right. And often, you know, when we talk about, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, once you get into this, it gets really interesting. I mean, you can think about density. You know, the places that I referenced along Mirror Lake, you know, look at the density in the FARs, there's no parking. So there are only 10, you know, they're whatever they are, 8 floors, right? There's no parking decks. So that's 8 floors of living space. So, you know, it's we should think differently, or we can think differently about density. We're not putting in, you know, a 4 floor parking deck.
To bring about some credence and perhaps accolades to one of the developers who came in here several years ago, and that was the incorporation of the Union Bank.
Yes.
Icons. And that was something that, to me, made a lot of sense. Preserving the old along with it and generating more economic development.
That's right. And that was something that Preserve the Burg was involved with as well. So the Icon building got built. They demolished part of a bank building. They saved the other half of the bank building. And I think, you know, it's hard for me, I sort of laugh a little bit about this stuff, because, you know, there was all these stories in the Catalyst that came out that the bank building was going to be restored, and it's going to be a high-end steakhouse. And they had all these behind-the-scenes photos, and oh my God, this is amazing. What a built-in, we're talking about marketing. When you save these old buildings, you've got an instant PR story. You've got an instant marketing edge and advantage. So now they're all in this building exploring it. Oh my God, it's so amazing. It's going to be this amazing place. I mean, if it was up to them, they would have torn it down. But now that it's there, now we're celebrating it and saying, oh my God, look at this amazing thing that, guess what? No one else has this. We have it. Very special, right? Who was right?
You mentioned the hex. You mentioned something about the hex block regulation or something. I'm particularly interested in that. I can talk to you later. But
sure.
Say anything about it.
So the hex block pavers have become kind of a signature of St. Pete sidewalks and neighborhoods. It is our logo. Although somebody told me that it looks like a stop sign. I'm like, well, anyway, we'll have to talk about that.
I just want to ask you, a lot of cities have stronger preservation regulations and laws. What can we do to strengthen ours here in St. Pete?
So let me, very quickly, on the hex blocks. So my understanding, and I'm a little hazy on it, but I believe that Preserve the Burg worked with the city to create the hex block paver ordinance, so that when you're doing construction in St. Pete, when you take you have to take the hex blocks out and do your project, then you have to replace them. That was not historically, it had not always been that way. Yeah. And then he's asking, you know, what can we do to strengthen our preservation laws? And again, that's something that, you know, that's a big component of what Preserve the Berg does. You know, I'm a, I know a lot of this stuff is just so in the weeds, but, you know, you see the work that Preserve the Berg does with regard to public programs, movies in the park, and a lot of the more high profile things, but we're really daily, you know, meeting with our council members, meeting with neighborhood associations, meeting with developers, meeting with builders, meeting with homeowners, and having these conversations. And so, you know, we were very involved in the St. Pete 2050 plan. So it's a constant dialogue. I will say that some of the things that St. Pete has in place are pretty good, especially relative to City of Tampa, and one in particular is the your demolition ordinance is believe it or not, it's pretty strong in that you can't demolish a building unless you have plans submitted and approved for a new project. What that does is it cuts down on the number of surface parking lots that you end up with within your city. So I would say it's a continual process. We'd like to, you know, there's a grant program that's available in the CRA. We'd like to see that up and running. But yeah, I mean, you can visit our website. We've got all kinds of policy information there.
Manny Leto from Preserve the Berg. Earlier, we heard from Phil Graham Jr. and Bill Dahl of the Waterfront Parks Foundation. All three gentlemen speaking on Wednesday evening at the St. Peter's Cathedral on Williams Park downtown, at the meeting of the St. Petersburg Downtown Neighborhood Association.